podcast. The penalty for this disgusting, un-American behavior is 1 year in prison or $10,000 fine or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under edict number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
And this is radio station WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this rather icy Tuesday evening. Yeah, you know, I've got nothing to complain about. There's snow on the ground, and it's just, it's not even December 10th yet. And it's not even the first time. About a week and a half ago, we also had a little bit of snow on the ground, and wow. This could be one of those winters. This could be one of those winters where Nobody knows what's going to happen next. I mean, there's a hurricane still in the Atlantic Ocean. Epsilon. We talked about Epsilon last week, and it's still around. Everything is unpredictable and not normal. And that's just the way I like it. You know, makes life a little bit exciting. But you're going to have to bear with me tonight because it's one of those weird kind of crazy days. This happens every now and then, and I'm sure it happens to most people out there, where you turn the wrong way or you sleep wrong or something, and your back is hurting you for like maybe 2 or 3 days. You know, and it's torture. You can't, you know, make those sudden jumps that you like to make. You can't chase people. You can't make the turn in the car when you're backing up, so you have to sort of just, you know, pray to Jesus and hope that, you know, there aren't any toddlers back there or anything like that. This happened today, though, in very quick succession. You know, I woke up feeling fine, and then inside of 10 minutes, something happened. I wish I knew what, but something happened. And I felt that little twinge, and I knew it was going to grow and become a full-fledged pain in the ass, and that's pretty much where it is right now. So I'm pretty much facing forward, which I guess is a good way to face. And I won't be able to whip around and do the usual athletics associated with this particular program. I also just might sound a little pissed off, too, because, well, it hurts, you know, and pain does that. And this is what happens when people get old. You know, I'm not quite there yet, but when I get there, I think I'm going to understand why old people are always seen as cranky, you know, because it hurts. They have all these things going on, and there's always pain involved. And when there's pain involved, you become a different person. You snap at people. You don't see the, you know, the humor in certain situations. You no longer hop, skip, and jump. And you just wonder, when is it all going to be over with already? So, and you know, there's nothing in this society of ours that's geared towards that perspective. Everything is geared towards, you know, the young whippersnapper type of perspective on television and radio and things like that. Go ahead, listen, you know, see if you find anything designed for the cranky people, the cranky old people. There's nothing. So when I do arrive in that arena, I hope to be able to kind of, you know, bring whatever it is I'm doing into that as well, whether it's a film, whether it's a radio, whether it's a radio station, rather a radio program, television, magazine. I hope to have that perspective, you know, the cranky perspective that feels a lot of pain because it's underrepresented in our society. Yeah, we talk about them. We talk about those people. We look at them. We say, isn't that too bad? But they're never the ones talking. They're never the ones presenting things. I think, you know, we might view things in a whole different light if it were changed like that. But anyway, I hope not to be like this for too much longer. It's amazing, though, how there are certain kinds of aches that you get. And backaches are never... They're never solved by little painkillers that you take for headaches. They just don't work. I don't know why that is. But it's annoying. And everybody has a different theory as to what you should do. Sleep on a hardwood floor. Sleep on a soft bed. You know, put hot compress. Put cold compress. Ignore it. Go to the doctor. Everybody has different views. So I'm just going to complain about it a bit. And hopefully, you know, that'll do something. If nothing else, it'll make people out there in a similar situation feel a little better. Or maybe I've just reminded them of something they were trying to forget. But anyway, that's why I might sound a little out of it, a little testy tonight. Of course, since we can't take phone calls, you can't really annoy me that much. I'd like to be annoyed. I'd like to be, you know, challenged or agreed with or whatever. I'm told the delay machine is coming very soon, so hopefully that means within the next month or so we'll be able to take phone calls again on this radio program, because we certainly do like to hear from our listeners. And there are so many of you out there. I can't believe it. The mail we get, especially from all around the country, I'm flabbergasted. I'm just I'm stunned. I simply can't believe it. I think we have more people listening in Canada than we do on Long Island, which is, well, it's a bigger place, I guess. That sort of makes a bit of sense. But wow, you know, the power of the internet, the power of broadcasting. It's a marvelous thing. And something I hope that we get to continue to do in this forum and in others. But we're always looking for your feedback. And you can write to us at otw@2600.com. What's that? otw@2600.com. That's 2600. Don't try to spell it out. Okay? All right. You know, it's annoying, too, because in so many browsers out there, I think Mozilla is one of them, you can just type CNN and hit return. And it's smart enough to go through all the various combinations and figure out that you want to go to CNN.com. You can type in /, and it'll figure out to go to /.org. But if you type 2600, it's a number, so it doesn't work. I think we have the only internet site out there where you can't do that. And unless somebody writes a browser with a plugin or something, or some kind of patch that will allow you to do that, we're forever going to be excluded from that particular shortcut. So one of the sad facts of the day. Well, speaking of sad facts of the day, I guess it's time to take a look at the news and see what's going on out there. And boy, it's more of the same, you know? I don't know how long I can just keep going on about this, about how stupid everybody is, you know, for letting this madness continue, and just how long is it going to continue for? And yeah, there's a few things I could be referring to. The current presidency, the current war, our current way of thinking. Or anything, really. But I'm referring to, you know, mostly the events that we've talked about many times on this program. I think more people are speaking up now. More people are speaking up, but, you know, we still don't have the 10,000 people in Washington, D.C. around the clock to demand an end to the war. We don't have that. If we did, the war would be over, or the occupation would be over, whatever you want to call it, within 30 days. I guarantee that. I wonder if we could pay 10,000 people to set up camp down there. You know, if we took up a collection, how much could that possibly cost? You know, you pay them a certain amount and guarantee them 30 days just to be down there. If we all pitched in, I'm just brainstorming on the air here, but I just think a show of force is very important at a time like this, and that's something that the opposition has not provided. Instead, the opposition is just doing more and more infighting and supposedly strategizing, but not really getting any place. Anyway, let's take a look at what's happening today, and then we'll go more into that, I suppose. Saddam Hussein has complaints about his trial. I don't know how many of you have been able to see that on television. It's kind of hard to see on American TV. I don't know why that is. You would think American TV would devote a special channel just to the Saddam Hussein trial. Maybe it's such a farce that we feel kind of embarrassed for perpetrating it in the first place. It's being aired on BBC, which nobody here can get. It's being aired on CNN International, which very few people here can get. If you have Time Warner, since they own CNN, they carry both channels, so you can watch it over there. But if you tune into any of the news channels, what do we have now? We've got CNN, we've got Fox, we've got MSNBC. Are there any others? Well, you've got all the local channels. You've got the CBS morning news. You got NBC's Today. You got Good Morning America. But you also have the local variants of that. Everybody has to give their weather forecast. Everybody has to give the sports scores. Everybody has to do the interviews with George Michael or whatever. You know, everybody has to do the same thing. Oh, and you have Fox, too, right? You have Fox does something in the morning as well. Not Fox News Channel, Fox the TV network. They're all on at the same time. Okay, but not one of them is devoting time to something like the Saddam Hussein trial. Not one. Instead, they all do the same thing. And you can try this. If you're ever up early in the morning, and I sometimes am because I stay up through the night, you can just go around the dial. And you'll notice this. At a certain time, maybe it's 8 minutes after the hour, I don't know. You'll go to Channel 2, CBS here, and you'll see that they're giving the weather forecast. And you'll go to NBC on Channel 4. They're giving the weather forecast. Channel 5, Fox, weather forecast. Channel 7, ABC, weather forecast. They all do the same thing at the same time. Good Lord, what's wrong with these people? They just want to be like each other. Well, why don't they all join together and make one channel instead of doing the same thing on four of them? And then you have the all-news channels, which are basically all the same news over and over again. No variation whatsoever. Oh, yeah, Fox is a bit more conservative than CNN, which I still think is pretty conservative. But there's no real alternatives. There's no real coverage of news. Unless you go someplace else. Unless you watch some foreign media. Then you might see the entire Saddam Hussein trial without somebody telling you what the temperature is in Tennessee. Like, you really need to know that. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's good to see something different. To not know the scores. To not know the temperature. I mean, every time something happens in Atlanta, CNN devotes all its time to it. If a prisoner escapes in Atlanta, why is that of interest to the entire world, or at least the entire nation? It's not. But because they're located there, they seem to think that that's a very important story. They have to cover it. They cover the lighting of the Atlanta Christmas tree like it's Rockefeller Center. It's not. I'm sorry. It's just not the same thing. That's the kind of thing that happens. You lose track of what's important in the world. And, you know, there to this day, there still is not a good global news source in this country that we can tune to. There was News World International, which was on some cable channels and some satellite, and that's now called Current TV. Al Gore took it over, and it's like MTV on Quaaludes. And any other... We had BBC America for a while that would have some news, but now it's mostly fixing up your home and garden type of programs. The thing is, everybody I know is interested in international news. Everybody is interested in knowing more about what's going on in the world. Yet it keeps getting taken away. And you have to really search to find something. So odds are you have not seen the Saddam Hussein trial. So we can move to the second sentence of this news story. In an angry outburst, he said he won't return to what he calls an unjust court. He also complained he has no fresh clothes and has been deprived of shower and exercise facilities. After the outburst, audio was cut off to the media gallery and the curtain drawn, so reporters couldn't tell what happened next. I wonder, why are they doing it that way? It's interesting to watch this. I think it was last week Saddam Hussein was giving some kind of a speech, and all of a sudden everything was just cut off because he was making too many good points, apparently. And the people in Iraq were afraid that the populace, they get to see it. They get to see it, I think, almost live. They delay it by 15 minutes for some reason, which is suspicious in and of itself. We're supposed to be so open. Why are we hiding all of this? Why are we turning off the cameras? Why are we delaying things 15 minutes? I don't get it. So, Saddam Hussein has been making all these speeches and points, but all the stories that we read about him here are kind of mocking him. You know, he deserves to be mocked, no question there, but they're kind of... not focusing on the story so much and focusing on the fact that he's complaining that he doesn't have clean clothes and sort of making it seem like he's exaggerating or something. I will not be in a court without justice, he said. Go to hell, all you agents of America. How can you not love the guy? I mean, really, we need to be able to see this. We need to be able to see just what it is that he's saying, what we're saying against him, how this particular courtroom is set up. I think it's kind of weird when you can't identify the witnesses, you can't identify the judges. I mean, I understand why, because it's very dangerous over there, but you sort of can't present evidence if nobody knows where the evidence is coming from. You could sort of make it up, you know, if there's no accountability. Anybody could say anything. Yeah, it's dangerous over there, but, you know, that's what happens when you invade countries and put dictators on trial. There's a certain risk factor involved. If you're not willing to take the risk, then you know, you might as well just keep the dictator in power. Unbelievable. And, you know, the latest thing, Ramsey Clark is now representing Saddam Hussein. That's kind of weird. The jury is still out on that in my head. Former Attorney General Ramsey Clark, frequent spokesperson for the left. I gotta say, it's not the smartest move for him if he wants to continue to represent the left. Because, you know, it's like handing something to your enemy. Yeah, you are defending Saddam Hussein now. It's kind of hard to get away from that fact when you're actually doing it. Now, I understand why somebody might feel that someone's got to step in and make sure this trial actually is fair and accountable and things like that. And I understand that, and that's a good thing. But the guy cannot continue to represent causes here, having defended someone as evil as Saddam Hussein. He's not defending the system. He's defending the person. That's what's happening here. And it's sort of a continuation of the entire farce where, you know, America is controlling everything. Well, now he has an American representative helping him. You know, it sort of perpetuates the myth that we can fix all the problems and fix the problems that we even cause. So, yeah, I have very mixed feelings on that. It's kind of, you know, the same feelings I have hearing basically commentators like Mamie Abu-Jamal on the radio. I know there are better spokespeople out there. And if he is cleared, that would be great, you know, if evidence is actually presented. But while somebody is considered to be, by at least the court of law and by, I think, most people, someone guilty of a horrible crime, he's not the best person to put up on the front pedestal as the spokesperson, because that simply makes it too easy for the opposition, the people who are against you, to say, look at the kind of people that you hang out with, the kind of people that you look up to. Now, yeah, I know a lot of people believe he's completely innocent, and I respect that, but a lot of people don't. And you wind up moving away from the actual issues and focusing too much on that. By no means am I saying, you know, let the guy rot in jail, let the guy be forgotten. But you have to separate that from the issues that are being talked about. Otherwise, those issues that are being talked about become eclipsed by those legal problems. And in the same way that that Ramsey Clark is kind of loses objectivity by defending Saddam Hussein. Okay, enough about that. What else has been going on? The U.S. military in Iraq has appointed an officer to investigate the Pentagon's controversial propaganda program. I don't know if you've heard about this, with all the torture and the secret prisons and, you know, our soldiers dying and things like that. You might not have heard about the propaganda program. Basically, what we do, by we, I mean our government, is plant stories all over the place, favorable stories, and pay Iraqi media to run them. Yeah. So, you know, we're planting news over there, but there isn't any good news, apparently, so we have to make it up and pay the media to run it. Now, Donald Rumsfeld said the Pentagon is still trying to gather the facts about the program, which came to light last week. I don't know why they have to gather facts. They're running it. The Pentagon has to gather facts about its own program? I don't get that at all. That's buying time to cover up some other scandal. Officials are trying to determine whether the program might have been mishandled by a contractor or if the military deliberately placed positive articles in the Iraqi press that weren't identified as advertising. Advertising now. And this is the best part of the entire story. Military officials in Iraq have said the program is needed to get out the truth. Now that's just the best part of it all, isn't it? Get out the truth. You need to pay somebody to present the truth in supposedly a country that is embracing democracy. Yeah. Tell me another one. Okay, that's there's so many here. President Bush is defending his administration's handling of terror suspects. Although he won't comment, and this is another amazing thing, he won't comment on reports of CIA-run prisons overseas. You know, that right there says it's happening, it's true. You know, you don't comment on it, you don't deny it, you don't condemn it. It's true, it's happening. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that one out. Anyway, he won't comment on that, but he says America doesn't hand suspects to third countries where torture takes place. You can interpret that any number of ways you want to interpret that. He tells reporters we abide by the law. And in fact, they rewrite it every hour just so they can make sure they're abiding by it. The president also stresses America is doing everything it can to protect its citizens within the law. Yeah. How many of you really believe that? Well, apparently a lot do, because while Bush says the U.S. doesn't engage in torture, most Americans say they don't have a problem if the U.S. does. A new poll by the Associated Press said most Americans who were surveyed believe torturing terror suspects is justified, at least in rare cases. Now, I bet these people watch 24. I commented on this earlier in the year when that program went off on a torture fest, apparently. Basically showing how you have to torture people or they just won't talk. And, you know, when that kind of thing is shown on television and backed up as somehow being justified, people are going to say, yeah, it really is justified. It really is. I saw it on television. The guy wouldn't have talked if he wasn't tortured, so it must be like that in real life. Television, fictional television, reflects the values of current-day society. That's why it's important to know what they're doing, to know what they're saying, to know what they are getting away with insofar as people are saying, yeah, that's true, that's accurate. Not saying they should be prohibited from doing this. They can do whatever they want. It's a form of art, but pay attention to it. It reflects a lot of important things. And most people in Britain, France, South Korea, they all agree with this. The question is all the more sensitive amid recent torture allegations and reports of secret prisons run by the CIA in Eastern Europe. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, who was traveling in Europe this week, says the United States is following all laws and treaties on the treatment of terrorism suspects. She also says the U.S. has shared life-saving intelligence with its allies. Well, that's nice, isn't it? But doesn't get away from the very disturbing facts in this case. Now, in Germany, actually this happened in Washington, D.C., a German man has alleged in a lawsuit today that the CIA held him captive and tortured him in Afghanistan last year after the spy agency mistakenly identified him as an associate of the September 11th hijackers. The only reason you're hearing about this is because it apparently was a mistake. They tortured the wrong person, but they did torture somebody, which means they're torturing many people. Now, this is the latest controversy surrounding... It's hard to say what the latest controversy is, because there's just so many of them flying around out there, but at the time that I printed this out, it was the latest controversy surrounding the CIA's rendition program in the War on Terror. Not sure why it's called that. But Khalid al-Masri said he was taken into custody while attempting to enter Macedonia on New Year's Eve 2003 and flown to Afghanistan. So he was trying to get to Macedonia, I guess the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, right? That's the proper way to say it. And then he was flown to Afghanistan. He wasn't trying to get to Afghanistan on his own. He was taken there. Weird. During 5 months in captivity, he was subjected to torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. That's according to his lawsuit. in the U.S. District Court in suburban Alexandria, Virginia. He's being represented by the ACLU. Although he should be represented by the American public, I think, as far as something horrible like this. At an ACLU news conference in D.C., his lawyers revealed that U.S. authorities on Saturday night refused to let al-Muzari into the country. Can you believe that? They wouldn't let him into our country to file a lawsuit. Well, I guess they don't want him to file a lawsuit, but that sure does speak volumes, doesn't it? They admit it's a mistake, and they still keep him out of our country. Al-Muzari spoke by video hookup from Germany, telling reporters that in Afghanistan, one of his interrogators told him, "You might be buried here." Now, in Berlin, where Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is, and hopefully she'll stay there, she refused to talk about it. Always refusing to talk about the things that we have you on, you know, the things that you are so guilty, you know, even the best lawyers in America could not help you out of this one. That's if the legal system even works and you get prosecuted for the things you're doing. Nope, refusing to talk about it. I wish I could refuse to talk about things. You know, things I don't want to talk about. But people always keep asking, and you have to answer the questions. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who was brand new, she said the U.S. has acknowledged making a mistake in the man's arrest. I'm happy to say we have discussed the one case, which the government of the United States has, of course, accepted as a mistake, Merkel said after meeting with Rice. The suit names as the main defendant former CIA director George Tenet, in addition to torture. He claims his due process rights were violated and that he was subjected to prolonged arbitrary detention. He's seeking damages of at least $75,000. That is nothing! $75,000! To be held for 5 months and tortured in a foreign country when you haven't even done anything. That's nothing. You should be getting that every day, I think. But you can't really put a price on such a thing. I am asking the American government to admit its mistakes and to apologize for my treatment, al-Muzari said in a written statement. Throughout my time in prison, I asked to be brought before a court, but was refused. Now I am hoping that an American court will say very clearly that what happened to me was illegal and cannot be done to others. And I think I know what's going through this guy's head. It's not the money, because this is nothing. $75,000 won't even pay for the lawyer, even if you do have the ACLU representing you. He wants the apology. He wants the recognition. He wants this not to happen again. And the American government is not willing to give him that. Again, that speaks volumes. The CIA rendition program, in which terror suspects are captured and taken to foreign countries for interrogation, has been heavily criticized by human rights groups. And if you look at that sentence there, I guess that makes it official. These people who are saying that there are no secret CIA flights, there are no prisons overseas, I think it's pretty much confirmed, especially by calling it the CIA rendition program. But the scope has not been disclosed by the CIA. Amnesty International claimed yesterday that 6 planes used by the CIA for renditions have made some 800 flights in or out of European airspace, including 50 landings at Shannon International Airport in Ireland. Oh my God, I've been to that airport. I've been to that airport where torture flights have landed. I feel so used now. Anyway, al-Muzari, 42 years old. He was born in Kuwait to Lebanese parents, and he moved to Germany in 1985. Apparently that's all you need to do to be on the radar for American officials. He's a married father of 5. He said that on New Year's Eve, 2003, he boarded a bus in his hometown of New Ulm for a holiday in Macedonia. At the border, he was stopped by Macedonian authorities, and his passport was confiscated. He said he was detained by local authorities for 23 days, and then handed over to what he believes was a team of CIA operatives. He then was flown to Afghanistan, where he was subjected to abuse during his months in captivity. In late May 2004, he was flown to Albania and then put on a plane back to Germany. Disgusting, isn't it? And the news just keeps getting better. Condoleezza Rice, while she's over in Germany... Actually, now she's... is she in Romania now? Oh, my goodness. She's made it all the way to Romania. Her Romanian counterpart and Condoleezza Rice have signed an historic pact establishing the first American military bases in a former Warsaw Pact country. The U.S. is taking over military bases near the Black Sea, putting U.S. forces within closer striking distance of potential targets in the Middle East and Central Asia. And this will help, quote, take terrorists off the streets, unquote, and save lives around the world. That's Condoleezza Rice today. She called Romania, which has been beset by allegations it hosted a secret CIA prison, a strong friend with whom we share common values. Boy, I have a bad feeling about this. Yeah, they just want us to come in there, don't they? They invited us in. And no doubt some weak-minded government officials did just that. But I find it hard to believe that people in that part of the world want U.S. bases. Boy. And all this to hunt down these so-called terrorists. The same ones that are going to win the war if we pull out, according to what Cheney said today. He argued forcefully against an early withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq, saying that would be unwise in the extreme and increase the risk of terrorist attacks in the United States and other nations. Okay, let's continue. Let's let the man speak. On this, both Republicans and Democrats should be able to agree. The only way the terrorists could win is if we lose our nerve and abandon our mission. He said this at a military base. Why is it whenever these guys have to say something defending themselves, they never say it in front of us. They never say it in front of the people of the United States. They say it in front of a military crowd. They say it in front of people who will get shot if they don't applaud. Okay, they won't get shot, but they certainly can't boo. Anybody out there in a military crowd boos and can prove that they did it, I'll buy you lunch or something. You know, not just a fast food thing, something good, like in the city. You know, like one of the places where you get waitresses and, you know, you leave a good tip. They come back, ask if everything's okay, you know, that kind of place. So, you know, I'm serious here. If you can prove that you were in a military crowd and you actually held up a sign even, or just uttered some kind of note of disapproval when they feed you these lines... But nobody will do that, because that's not the kind of crowd where that kind of thing can happen. Cheney continued, I realize some have advocated a sudden withdrawal of our forces. That would be unwise in the extreme, a victory for terrorists, bad for the Iraqi people, and bad for the United States. He said this to cheers from the crowd of 3,000 troops. What a big surprise. To leave that country before the job is done would be to hand over Iraq to car bombers and assassins. Yeah, and meanwhile, also today, Howard Dean has said that the U.S. cannot win the Iraq war. And in fact, he's drawing quite a bit of fire. This could be very interesting. The comments today could be very interesting. He told a Texas radio station, WOAI, in San Antonio, that the idea the war in Iraq can be won is just plain wrong. Actually, he said this yesterday. My apologies. He drew a parallel between efforts to hand over security responsibilities to Iraqis and similar efforts during the Vietnam War with the South Vietnamese. And that side ultimately lost the war. In fact, our side lost the war, too. Of course, the South Vietnamese couldn't manage to support their own country, he said. I do not believe in making the same mistake twice, and America appears to have made the same mistake twice. Dean said he wished President Bush had paid more attention to the history of Iraq before we had gotten in there. The idea that we are going to win this war is an idea that unfortunately is just plain wrong. He said he backed the redeployment of 20,000 troops to Afghanistan and a force in the Middle East to deal with Al-Qaeda in... but just not in Iraq. We cannot have our troops being targets there. He said, and RNC, Republican National Committee Chairman Ken Mellman, blasted his Democratic counterpart, accusing Dean of embracing retreat and defeat and predicting that America will lose the war in Iraq. His outrageous prediction sends the wrong message to our troops, the enemy, and the Iraqi people. Just 10 days before historic elections, Democrats across the nation should stand up and reject the pessimism of their chairman. Well, you know, I'll go a step further, and I'll say that I think we need to lose this war. Okay, we do. If anything, just to give a good slap across the face to these people who think that they can just go into other countries and set things up and do it their way, and that's as easy as that. Obviously, they did not learn from Vietnam. They did not learn a thing. Now, losing the war does not mean losing to terrorists. I think we're losing to terrorists enough as it is. I see that every day with all the searches, all the cameras, all the rights being taken away right here at home. All the paranoia, all the color codes, all the walls being erected and the closed national monuments and everything else. The fear that has been injected into us without any further incidents even happening. Yeah, we've lost on that front, that's for sure. So, if it were even possible to win this war, which it is not, we wouldn't regain those things as a result. In fact, it would probably even be reinforced, because these idiots would just go and say, it's because we won this war that there hasn't been another incident. And it's because of the security precautions and restrictions on speech and gatherings and things like that, that we're safe now. So we're doing a good job. We did the right thing. Now, losing the war, first of all, puts an immediate end to the number of people dying over there, which is insane, and I hope somebody is put on trial for killing all those people, on somebody for putting them in an impossible situation in the first place. So that'll stop. People will stop dying. Those people can come back. We can start assessing the situation in a more rational, intelligent way. And we'll be in exactly the same position back home. Nothing will change. We'll still have the same threat of terrorism that we have today, and that we will have yesterday. It's not particularly difficult to be a terrorist, you know. It really isn't. I don't know why people think that that you need to devote all this money and all these plans and things like that. All it takes, as was proved in London this summer, all it takes are some people from your own country who are displeased and motivated enough to put their own lives on the line. And it seems to me that if you wind up being hated all around the world for your actions, you're just going to have more and more people like that, both at home and abroad. And it doesn't matter how you fortify the border, it doesn't matter what kinds of walls you build, doesn't matter how many countries you invade, it's still going to be extremely easy. Take a look at what's going on in New York City. New York City, which is one of the bastions of free speech still, but it's been ruled by a court that it's okay to search people on the subway. Just random searches based on whatever they feel like. You know, somebody looks a little too Arab or, you know, is otherwise suspicious. It's perfectly okay, according to the courts now, to ask that person to submit to a search. Now, the person doesn't have to, of course. The person doesn't have to enter the subway system. But if they do, they have to show the officers what's in their bag. Now, does this really make things any safer? Everybody knows it doesn't. Let's say that I have a bomb in my knapsack, okay? And I go downstairs and I see that they're searching people. Well, then I simply walk back upstairs, go down the block to the next subway station where they're not searching people, and get on that train with my bomb. No problem at all. If they have people searching at every subway station, it's still quite easy. You simply get on a bus. You simply leave the bag on in a shopping mall, on a street corner. This kind of thing simply changes our society. It doesn't stop terrorism in any way. In fact, it makes terrorists more determined to carry out their missions. They don't give up very easily. The real solution is to look at why people want to blow themselves up in the first place. And if you have a whole lot of people who want to do that, odds are there's something really wrong with your place in the world to start with. Not justifying what they do, but boy, it's just as easy now as it was 20 years ago and as it'll be 10 years from now. That will not stop. But now we have people searching in subways. We have all kinds of other restrictions on our movements. That you can't go into the Statue of Liberty anymore because someone's afraid that someone's going to do something in there. So all these things are in place, and they're not going away. And we haven't won a thing. We've just lost so much. So yeah, we need to lose the war because that will focus attention on what's going on here and what we need to change and what we need to fix. Now, interesting related story too. Not really related, but kind of weird in some ways, kind of local too. It takes place in Connecticut. You might have heard about this. A judge has set bond at $250,000 for a Willimantic man who confessed to phoning in bomb threats that closed courthouses last week. Last week, courthouses all around Connecticut were closed. Now, what happened was Javier Rodriguez, a Willimantic, phoned in the four bomb threats because he was due in Danielson Superior Court but couldn't get a ride. I could not make this up. He was scheduled to face charges of driving with a suspended license. So he didn't want to drive. Makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. If you're going to charge somebody, I guess you should give them a ride or something, or, you know, there should be public transport. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is, he phoned in the bomb threat so he wouldn't have to go to court because he couldn't get a ride. This is his story anyway. Later, he told police he drove to the courthouse anyway, moron, to see if the bomb threats had worked. Okay, we're not dealing with Albert Einstein here, obviously. So, because the calls weren't specific, state police evacuated all 45 state courthouses as a precaution. Now, this guy is facing 17 charges, including 4 counts of terrorism that could send him to jail for 80 years. Okay, you know, the guy's a jerk. The guy's a moron. The guy's an imbecile. No question about that. And on top of everything else, he's a reckless driver. But a terrorist? A terrorist? Come on. I mean, we've all called in bomb threats at one point or another in our lives. No? Oh, okay. I'm mistaken. Some of us have called in bomb threats at one point in our lives. And to equate something like that, a stupid act like that, with terrorism, I think it kind of minimizes terrorism, doesn't it? Those people who take the time to strap bombs to themselves, blow themselves up, and kill God knows how many people. It's a real disservice to them to equate them with people who simply make a telephone call. It takes a lot of work to be a terrorist. It takes a lot of mental preparation. Now, not everybody who does something that causes inconvenience and maybe scares some people can be defined in the same way. But this simplistic way of blanketly labeling everybody, I don't know. I think it does more harm than good. Yeah, the guy should definitely, be caned or something. I don't know. Whatever the appropriate punishment is for that kind of a stupid action. But that's what it is. It's a stupid action. This guy is a jerk. Let's not equate him with the same thing as blowing up airplanes and otherwise inconveniencing and scaring people. Okay, let's take a look at some pieces of mail because we're running out of time pretty quickly. It's amazing how fast hours go. And, you know, I haven't felt much pain, which is good. I haven't turned around either. As soon as I turn around, I'm sure it's going to really smart quite a bit. Before we get into the mail, though, this is something else that I think proves some of the things I've been saying about how there's really no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And that's one of the reasons why you don't see Democrats calling for this war to end, because they are just as much responsible. Okay, maybe not just as much, but no, they are just as much, because they didn't stand up when they could have. And silence is complicity. And saying stupid words on the Senate floor, that's also complicity. Hillary Clinton, my favorite person, she's co-sponsoring an anti-flag burning bill. Can you believe this? This is our best hope for president in 2008. Oh, my God. A Republican bill that would ban some forms of flag burning has one Democratic co-sponsor, Senator Hillary Clinton. She is the sole co-sponsor of a bill that would make it a crime to intimidate anyone by burning a flag. I don't know what that means exactly. It would make it a crime to burn someone else's flag or to destroy a flag on federal property. All right, so it's kind of a conditional flag-burning thing. But it's really kind of silly when you think about it. The bill does not address the issue of a constitutional amendment banning flag-burning. Clinton's move to co-sponsor the bill, and this is the best part of it all, is seen by many observers as an apparent attempt to win over conservative voters as she preps for a possible run for the White House in 2008. Come on already. Do you really think you're going to win over the conservative voters? You didn't win over the conservative voters when your husband cheated on you, okay? If that didn't work, nothing's going to work. Because no matter how many anti-flag burning bills you co-sponsor, your Republican counterpart is going to sponsor 10 times more. They're always going to win. Be liberal. Be different. Of course, you have to be liberal and different to do that, but the point is, nobody is going to win by being the same. It's like, you know, it's that TV network thing all over again. It's ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox all airing the weather at 8 minutes after the hour, not doing anything different. The same thing happens with our politicians. They all do the same thing. They all want to appeal to the same people, and nobody says anything different. Nothing changes. Clinton is in the middle of a 6-state campaign. Campaign swing aimed at raising money for her Senate re-election and possibly raising support for the White House run. And this happened... Wait a minute. What did I just say here? She's in the middle of a 6-state campaign swing aimed at raising money for her Senate re-election. She's being re-elected as senator to New York, right? Why does she go to other states for that? That doesn't sound right. No, she shouldn't be doing that at all. She was in Chicago, Denver, Michigan, New Jersey... No, if you're a senator, you should only raise money inside your state. What's going on here? This sounds like something Tom DeLay would have his hand in. Okay, well, whatever. Okay, let's listen to a few pieces of mail here. otw@2600.com, of course, is our email address, and we'd love to hear from you. Please, hate mail, too, is also welcome. If you're listening to some of the things we're saying here tonight and smashing your fist against the table and being all angry because you can't call in, well, you can write to us, otw@2600.com, and maybe we'll even read it on the air, such as this person who wrote in with some information about seawolves, which I mentioned last week. Seawolves, of course, being the nickname of the athletic team here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. A seawolf is not a fictitious creature. They actually do exist, and he quotes Wikipedia. Of course. The sea wolf, also known as the sea cat or wolf fish, is a marine fish, the largest of the family, something unpronounceable I'm not even going to try. In spite of its large size, it has retained the bodily form and general external characteristics of the small blennies. I don't even know what those are. Its body is long, subcylindrical in front, compressed in the caudal portion, smooth and slippery, the rudimentary scales being embedded and almost hidden in the skin. An even dorsal fin extends the whole length of the back, and a similar fin from the vent to the caudal fin as in blennies. What am I talking about here? This makes no sense at all, but I'm sure it makes perfect sense to people who follow this kind of thing. Anyway, if you type in seawolf in Wikipedia, you'll even get to see a picture of one. Thank you, Bushwick, for sending that in. And I should also take this opportunity to point out that we're not going to be on next week because of a seawolf game. And it's a surprise what sport it is. All right, I'll tell you. It's women's basketball. But I was talking to some people about college sports, actually. Subject comes up every now and then, you know, when we run out of other things to talk about. When I was a kid, I always figured, you know, college sports should be something where people who are college students are playing. You know, I don't mean college athletes. I mean college students, the people that you go to class with, the people who wear glasses and, you know, have those straight edges and, you know, all these geeky things. You know, I always figured that people who play college sports would really suck. I thought that was kind of like part of the allure of it. Instead, you have people who are better than professional players playing sports. And I just wonder, how did that get started? Whose bright idea was it on a bright sunny day on a college campus someplace to say, hey, what happens if we just decide to build a big stadium in the middle of the campus and make all the players as good as professionals? That would tie into the academic world nicely, wouldn't it? How did that happen? How did college sports become so good so that they actually eclipse the academic part of collegiate life? I don't get it. I don't understand how that happened. It's really kind of strange. And that's what happens, you know? People look at UCLA. What do you think about UCLA? You know, they have classes there, but you probably just think about football or Michigan State, you know, things like that. They're all football teams or basketball teams. Why don't the people who want to play the sports not take the classes? You know, they play the sports all the time. They're probably not going to use chemistry in their lives, are they? They're probably not going to really need the quote from John Stuart Mill that they pick up in English class. They could use that extra time to become really, really good and be in the professionals the entire time. And those people who want to take the classes won't have to worry about all the people coming to see the football games. They won't have to worry about being beaten up by all the football players, you know, and all that other stuff that goes along. I just don't see how the two worlds ever connected. I'd like to know more about this. Okay, someone else wrote in to advise that I think when the hurricane season ends, it's considered a blizzard. Well, actually, I don't think that's true. I don't think Epsilon is a blizzard. But this person also wonders, will we get to Omega? It's possible. You know, I've talked to a few people about this. The hurricane season ended last week. But a hurricane could still form. It's just not playing by the rules. So, yeah, we could get to Omega, even though it's past the hurricane season. Dear Emmanuel, on the last show you mentioned just how annoying it is to get a human these days when you call a company. I think you also mentioned something about somebody driving and having to push all these buttons being very dangerous indeed. This person feels the same way and set up a cheat sheet of ways to reach a human. I thought you'd find this amusing, signed James. And James, yes, we've gotten this a million times at Off the Hook as well. It's the website. Apparently it appeared on Slashdot, so that's why we've gotten this so many times. The website is www.paulenglish.com. That's the guy's name, paulenglish.com/IVR/info.html. I'd like nothing better than to take one of these examples. He gives examples of all these corporations and ways to get to an operator quickly, what buttons you have to hit, words you have to say. I'd love to do that right now, except we're not allowed to. We're not allowed to. If I was to hit zero, I would have to ask that zero operator permission in advance to use her voice on the radio. Somehow I'd have to know which one was going to pick up. I'd have to contact her or him, and it's just impossible. Fortunately, though, there's another radio program on another radio station where such restrictions do not take place, and maybe tomorrow night on Off the Hook, we can play around with that as well. We'll be on tomorrow night at 7, and we'll play around then. We'll see you next week on this show. Good night.